folks. Today is Tuesday, September 3rd, 2013. Welcome to another edition of the Dr. Mark Foster Show. Today I will address a new topic called Universal Sufism. Universal Sufism is a movement that was brought to the United States and to much of the rest of the Western world by a fellow named Hazrat Inayat Khan. He lived from 1882 until 1927, born in northern India, spent considerable time, in fact, the rest of his life, with a few trips back, in the Western world, and he created this new thing that he referred to as Universal Sufism. Now, my criticism of Universal Sufism has been based upon my understanding of certain Baha'i texts, and I still hold to that particular understanding, but I've somewhat modified it, and I'll explain why that is. First, Baha'u'llah was critical of people who called themselves Sufis, mystical Muslims, and yet did not follow al-Sharia, which is the name for the body of traditions or laws, in effect, religious law, that was established by the Prophet Muhammad. In other words, many Sufis argued that if one was pursuing the Sufi path of the heart, going directly to the goal of al-fana, which is annihilation literally, but it's the annihilation of the ego or the lower self, then one need not worry about following the outer laws that were brought by the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. Again, I think that that is still a valid criticism to be applied to Universal Sufism, because what Inayat Khan did is precisely that. He created this new version of Sufism, which was basically divorced from Islam. Now, however, I will tell you why my views have changed somewhat on the subject. Not entirely, but somewhat. And to do that, I'm going to go back and give you a brief overview of what Khan did, what his particular background was, and why I think that that is somewhat significant. Inayat Khan was initiated, or took bay'ah, which literally translates as selling, but it's basically selling one's own heart to a particular spiritual leader or sheikh, from several different Sufi orders. But the order that he most closely identified with was the Chishtri order, which was brought to India during the so-called Indian Middle Ages and became a very important part of the Bhakti Sufi movement. Personally, I have drawn very close to that movement because of my connection to a being whom I regard as my guardian angel, Hazrat Sultan Bahu. He too was a part of this Bhakti Sufi movement, this broad interfaith cross-fertilization of traditions which existed throughout South Asia, especially among the poorer populations of that area, and which attracted people because it promised a kind of direct devotion to God, where one need not worry about caste distinctions. Everyone, regardless of their caste or position in life, was welcomed into this new emerging movement. In a way, it is not unlike some movements that we've seen recently in the Western world, such as the Pentecostal and Charismatic movements, which too have generally drawn from the relatively subaltern or oppressed or underclass populations. In fact, based on my own research on Pentecostalism, which was the subject of my doctoral dissertation, I found that Pentecostals were, on average, significantly poorer than the general population. So I think that what I said could apply, in a sense, to the Pentecostals as well. But what distinguished the Sufi Bhakti movement, or Bhakti Sufi movement, from Pentecostalism was that it was, by nature, interfaith. It involved not only members of the indigenous religions of India, including what we today call Hindus and Jains, but it also involved Muslims, who were not originally from that area, but who came to that area as a way to spread the religion of Islam. So the interfaith aspect of it is, I think, what is most significant about it. And again, this Chishtri order, or Tariqa, which is the Arabic word for order, was one of the most significant orders that existed in India at that time, and even until the present day. Now, in 1914, Hazrat Inayat Khan began the Universal Sufi Movement. After his death, there were rivaling claims for successorship. After subsequent deaths, there have been additional rival claims for leadership. So now there are several movements which all claim to be successors to that movement started by Hazrat Inayat Khan. However, they do these days, at least in some areas, cooperate more than they did in the past. Now, Universal Sufism, although it is not specifically Islamic, is, I think, a continuation, in a sense, of the Bhakti Sufi movement. That same kind of interfaith, universal spirit, that was a part of the Bhakti Sufi movement, including the Chishtri order, is now seen again in what I think might be described as a modern revival of the Bhakti Sufi movement. Specifically, here is what Hazrat Inayat Khan wrote on the subject, a short one-sentence quotation. Although Sufism is the essence of all religions, and its influence is upon us all, yet it can be more justly called the esoteric, or hidden, side of Zoroastrianism, Judaism, Christianity, and Islam. One of his currently living successors is a guy by the name of Pir Zia Inayat Khan. He has a PhD in religious studies from Duke University. So in addition to being the head of an order, he is also a religious scholar, and he has written scholarly works on the subject of Sufism and other religions. This is a quotation from a website called Centrum Universel, very brief quotation, in which he makes a distinction, but I think a very important one, between what universal Sufism is and what Islam is. And I was very impressed, actually, with this quotation, which is why I am going to read it. Islam itself can be distinguished between name-brand Islam and generic Islam. The Quran Sharif, which translates as the Noble Quran, itself refers to a multiplicity of prophets. It says, "We have sent a prophet to every community." And in the Hadith literature, which are the words that were reportedly said by Muhammad and his companions, that is to say, in the transmission of the sayings of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, there is reference to 124,000 messengers. These were all messengers of a single divine message, and that divine message is Islam in the generic sense, the essential religion within all existing religious forms, including the form that we call Islam, which is really the Mohammedan version of Islam, that is name brand Islam. Sufism has a deep, essential connection with both generic Islam, with universal religiosity, which is the common dimension of the depth of human experience, which can be found in the depths of all religions, and which can be traced back to the earliest prophets. And Sufism is a historical phenomenon which has a special connection with the dispensation of the Islamic religion, which is one form out of many of the risala, of the message. The word risala translates as message. Now, what that quotation did was it put universal Sufism into that sort of context. For the first time, I actually read a leader of the universal Sufi movement who identified universal Sufism with Islam by making that distinction between generic and universal Islam. And it is that particular quotation, more than anything else I have read about this movement, which has impressed upon me that universal Sufism is a continuation, one continuation among many, but nonetheless a continuation of the Bhakti Sufi movement. So as a result of that, although I am not a universal Sufi, or any kind of Sufi, I'm not a Muslim, and I'm not a member of any of the organizations which identify themselves as universal Sufism, still, as an outsider, as an academic, as somebody who has been doing a lot of independent and academic professional scholarship on the subject of Islam, I have a newfound appreciation for universal Sufism by placing it into that context of the Bhakti Sufi movement. Until next time, this is Dr. Mark Foster. Have a good one.